You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Thursday episode, my co-host, Nick Lee. Glad to have you listening in, whether this is your first time listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast or you are a regular listener. We're glad to have you on board. Jam-packed episode coming your way. Going to break down some offensive day three sleepers to keep a close eye on in next week's NFL draft. And we're going to answer some questions in our weekly mailbag segment. So let's get to it. This episode is brought your way by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. One of the themes of this offseason for the Seahawks has been maintaining continuity. Now, they've certainly made some moves bringing in outside players. They traded for Gabe Jackson. They signed Akella Witherspoon and Gerald Everett recently, Alden Smith, Kerry Hyder. So there have been some moves to add new players, but the Seahawks have emphasized retaining their own players for the most part. A few surprise returns, such as Chris Carson and Carlos Dunlap. They stuck with that theme today, agreeing to terms with their backup quarterback, Geno Smith, on a one-year deal. Nick, I don't think this is a surprise to anyone. Really, maybe the only surprise to me is it happened this early.
Yeah, I was wondering if they were going to take a look perhaps at how the draft shook out with some of the quarterbacks, because I know that Russell Wilson will 99.9% very likely be starting for the Seahawks week one in 2021, but I think that this offseason kind of shook everyone to the core. Like, what does the future of this franchise look without Russell Wilson? Because a day will come. I don't know if it's this year, next year, 2, 4, 5, 10 years, who knows. A day will come where there'll be a new quarterback in town. And what will that look like, and how did the Seahawks go about that? And I think that there might be a time soon where they start looking for the draft and looking for a guy that they like to perhaps groom or replace later on down the line. And I know that they're not going to get the Trevor Lawrences, the Zach Wilsons of the world, but you know, someone like Shane Bichelle or Sam Ellinger, Felipe Franks, way down the line there in the draft. But yeah, not surprising that Geno Smith came back. It's a security blanket. It's an insurance policy. It's easy. It's secure. And I always joke that the backup quarterback for the Seahawks is the most boring job in sports.
It really is, although you get pretty good money for just holding on to a Microsoft Surface tablet. I used to say clipboard because that's what it was like for decades, but now these backups are carrying technology instead. But Geno Smith is an important part of this team, though, because of how effective he is at winning coin tosses in overtime. And so keeping him around, he's really taken the torch from Tavares Jackson back in the day. Jackson was really good at winning those coin tosses, and Geno Smith has maintained that tradition. So that's really been the most important thing that he's provided the Seahawks. But I've argued this before. I think that bringing in young quarterbacks makes sense when you're bringing in undrafted players that you can develop, maybe practice squad guys. We've seen the Seahawks do that the last couple of years. Gordon didn't work out last year, ended up getting cut, had a pretty rough training camp. But they did go out and they made a trade with the Falcons during training camp, and they were able to bring in Danny Etling, a mobile quarterback that played at LSU, Purdue before then, and he's still on the roster. They have Alex Magoo still on the roster, his second stint with the Seahawks. So they have some bodies there. Maybe they add one more quarterback in undrafted free agency, depending how the draft shakes out at that position. But as long as Russell Wilson is your guy under center, which I'm 100% certain he is going to be this next season. I think we have reached the point where all that talk can be pushed aside, at least till next year. Hopefully the season goes well and we don't have to worry about this drama in 2022. But as long as he is there, I think you want to have an experienced backup available just in case Russell Wilson is no longer Iron Man and something happens, he has to miss time. I would rather have a guy like Geno Smith that has started more than 25 games in the NFL than, say, Danny Etling being my backup, a player that really has not played meaningful regular season snaps in the NFL.
Yeah, like I said, it's the easy security blanket, and nothing against Geno Smith. I wholeheartedly agree that, God forbid, Russell Wilson goes down, you feel way better about your chances of staying in the ball game with Geno Smith than you do with Alex Magoo or Danny Etling or something like that. Just there's less of a wild card. So yeah, it's a higher floor, I guess. That's what you want in a backup quarterback. You're not asking the guy to go out and win you 10, 11 games. You're just asking for a high floor if your starting quarterback goes down. I think Geno Smith is that safe floor where it just won't totally bottom out.
Former second-round pick, a guy, as I said, that has started a bunch of games in his career and was ineffective at times as a starter, but a lot better backup than a lot of teams have. So it does give the Seahawks a security blanket in case something does happen to Russell Wilson. He truly has been the Iron Man in the league. He's started all 16 games every season he has been in the league since being drafted in the third round out of Wisconsin in 2012. So again, this has not been an eventful position during the entire Russell Wilson era. There was one game he got knocked out against the 49ers and Trevon Boykin came in and played some meaningful snaps. But that game was already in the bag. We saw Geno Smith play in the blowout against his former team, the Jets, this last season. And he played well in his limited action, 4 for 5 for 33 passing yards. So did what he needed to do. Came in, completed a few passes during mop-up duty time, and the Seahawks get out of there with a 40-3 victory. That's really the only way that a backup has been able to play in Seattle since 2012. And hopefully, for the sake of the Seahawks, no offense, Geno, but hopefully it stays that way in 2021. And the only one under center is number 3, unless the Seahawks are winning a blowout like they did against the Jets. When we come back in the second quarter, we're going to tackle your questions in our weekly mailbag segment. Nick and I will be answering as many as we can. We'll be right back. You're listening to Locked On Seahawks Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car and truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection. Reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks Podcast, Thursday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Nick Lee. The Locked On Podcast Network is covering the NFL draft from every angle. Catch up on the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 podcast presented by Odyssey. Follow Locked On NFL Draft and the Draft Dudes podcast for the latest draft news, and stay tuned for more info about our upcoming live NFL draft coverage. Nick, it's time for our weekly mailbag segment. Tons of questions from the 12s. We weren't able to get to this last week without having a Friday show due to some unfortunate circumstances that came up late in the week. But let's get to these questions. First one coming from Eric Lougheed tweets, do you think it's more likely that Seattle makes a trade for more picks before the draft or during the draft? Nick, you're on the clock.
Well, I think it's the funny thing about the Seahawks is, when will they make a trade? It's not if they'll make a trade. It's when, before or during. We've moved on to that. With it being the number 56 pick, I think it's much more likely during the draft. It's pretty rare, I think, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, Corbin, but it's pretty rare to see trades that far back being traded beforehand, unless they're part of some bigger deal, like towards the up in the first round. You don't really see second-round picks being swapped a ton a day or two or something like that before the draft. I think it's a lot because trades that happen in the second round usually start to happen as people's boards start moving around during the draft. So a lot of these happen later when the bullets start flying in all these war rooms across the league when the clock is on draft day, because something shakes out in the draft they weren't expecting. A guy is falling that they had pretty high that they think they can get if they just get up a couple more spots, that kind of thing. You saw that with Seahawks with Daryl Taylor last year. So I think that's going to be kind of a heat of the moment trades. And I think the Seahawks are going to be the benefactors of other teams going through that, wanting to get that 56 spot, perhaps ahead of another team to trade up. So I think it'll be during, just because of the nature of it being a second round pick. There's not that sexy, you know, crazy Eagles or 49ers trades like we saw a couple weeks ago. Because those are important. Those are the big time top 10, top 15 picks. You'll see those dealt before the draft starts. But in the second round, it's gonna have a lot to do with how the draft board shakes out once that clock starts.
Nick, I will give you $50 if the Seahawks make a trade with one of their picks before the draft starts. I just don't see it happening, and you made a great explanation for it. When you're that far back in the draft, no first-rounders. Really, the only way they would be making a deal beforehand is if they're trading one of their own players to get a pick, which I think if that was going to happen, it probably already would have happened. Yeah. Or they were wanting to trade one of their picks for a player on another team, which I really don't see the Seahawks doing that when they only have three picks. They already traded away one of their four picks to get Gabe Jackson. So I think at this point, the chances of them doing any trading to get picks before the draft is next to zero. This question coming from David Hershey tweets, if Marquise Blair beats out Ugo Amadi for the nickel cornerback, where does Amadi fit in or playmakers? This almost seems to me like one of those situations where you could do some mixing and matching with sub packages, depending on which team you're playing, the types of players you're going against, because you're talking about two different players. Marquise Blair is more of a hard hitter, a big nickel, whereas Ugo Amadi is more traditionally built like a normal slot cornerback. And they have different skill sets, and they're both hard-nosed. They're both really solid athletes. I would actually say Marquise Blair is probably the better athlete of the two, and then you're looking from an instinct standpoint, Amadi probably has the edge there. So they both bring different tools to the table, and I agree it'd be nice to see them both on the field, but if Marquise Blair wins this job, which right now that's what I would predict, because if he's 100% recovered from his ACL injury, he clearly beat out Ugo Amadi for that position last year. He had a fantastic training camp. If that happens, then Amadi is your backup free safety behind Quandre Diggs, and he gives you extra depth at that slot corner position, and he's going to excel on special teams. If Amadi ends up holding onto that job, now Marquise Blair is your backup strong safety. You can still mix him in dime packages like they did with Ryan Neal last year. Really, Ryan Neal's the one that would be the odd man out there in terms of getting playing time away from special teams. So it's a good problem to have. You have a couple really talented defensive backs. They're going to be fighting for a starting spot at that position. And then whoever loses out, you still got to find ways to get them involved. And so, again, that's a good problem that I'm sure Pete Carroll appreciates having, rather than the opposite where I don't have a slot corner. He's got a couple guys that can handle those duties. Cool Hawk fan tweets, should the Seahawks be concerned at all that cover two defenses are a weakness that Russell Wilson simply cannot be fixed with a new offensive coordinator in Shane Waldron? I think this is a decent question when you consider how things ended last year for Russell Wilson in this offense.
Well, you know what I say about absolute statements and how those are for Sith Lords and that's it. Even though that's kind of an absolute statement in and of itself. Anyway, for this, you know, I feel like saying one simple defensive, or no, it's not simple, but one defensive scheme totally shuts down Russell Wilson and that's it. He can't fix that. Totally discredits Wilson as a quarterback. He's been elite in the NFL for 8-9 seasons and they are just now figuring this out. I don't think so. I think, you know, he's truly is one of the greatest quarterbacks of this generation, and they will get through this, and a fresh set of eyes and Shane Waldron certainly can't hurt. I'm going to give more credit to Wilson than that. You don't think that in his time at NC State, Wisconsin, and all this time with the Seahawks, with multiple offensive coordinators, that they haven't stumbled across this before. I find that hard to believe. Now, I think that things did get stale. I think that there was a lack of willing to adjust, and there was maybe a bit of figuring out of Brian Schottenheimer's system a little bit. So I think I don't want to discredit Russell Wilson quite like that. And I think with Shane Waldron coming in, a new system, maybe hopefully to inject some life into that offense and complicate things up for the defense to face. I think that'll be good for both the Seahawks and Russell Wilson to kind of break that mold, break through that's the rut they were in last year. I'm not sure it was an issue of one defense is going to there's this silver bullet that's going to beat Russell Wilson every time. I don't think it's quite like that.
Yeah, I'm going to give the quarterback the benefit of the doubt here, as well as Shane Waldron. He deserves a chance to show what he can do as a play caller in the NFL. He's never been an offensive coordinator before, and obviously there's some reasons why that might scare you a little bit because he has no experience, but at the same time, he's been working under Sean McVay. He's been around a number of good offensive minds in his NFL coaching career. He was with New England for a little while too. So he has had really good coaches above him to learn from. And so I think you got to give Shane Waldron a chance. And there are some things about Russell Wilson. I hate bringing up the height, but I do think throwing to the middle of the field sometimes can be a bit of an issue for him because he can't see over the line like some of your taller quarterbacks can. I do think that that is a reasonable statement to make, but that does not mean that he cannot beat cover two. And like you said, if that was the case, teams would have figured that out a long time ago. Offensive adjustments are going to help Russell Wilson moving season. Steve Francis tweets, what role do you see Daryl Taylor in? Possibly Sam linebacker? Well, really this hedges on what happens with Aldon Smith and his situation. If Aldon Smith's on the roster, I think Daryl Taylor has a great chance of moving to the Sam linebacker position because he did play outside linebacker his first 2 years at Tennessee. He's really athletic. He has experience dropping back. He could be that Bruce Irvin-style Sam linebacker that the Seahawks have had a lot of success with during the Pete Carroll era. If they don't have Aldon Smith and they're not going to replace him with somebody else, then there may still be a need to have him rushing off the edge. And I could still see him getting some reps of the Leo position, even if he is playing the Sam linebacker spot when they're in nickel packages. They did that with Bruce Irvin. So it doesn't eliminate him from rushing off the edge, but I'm definitely intrigued by the idea of him playing Sam linebacker. The key is going to be, is he healthy? Pete Carroll sounded like Daryl Taylor was heading the right direction when he finally returned to practice in January. Now they're just hoping they can get him out on the field, and maybe he ends up playing the Sam spot, depending what happens with KJ Wright here in the next few weeks as he still remains unsigned. James Flack tweets, what receivers should the Seahawks target in the second round? So, Nick, I guess throw out a few guys that you would be willing to take at pick 56 if the Seahawks were going to go receiver.
Well, if they stick around at 56, that'd be a pretty bold one to pick a receiver, but I think that'd be great. And this is a really good receiver draft. Even if they trade down a little bit, maybe get into the high or into the 60s, I think that they can still get a really solid receiver. A couple names to throw out. Amon-Ra St. Brown. I'm a huge Amon-Ra St. Brown fan. He'd be an excellent option as the hybrid between Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. He's not quite as speedy and refined as Tyler Lockett, but he's also bigger. And he's not quite as mighty in stature as DK Metcalf, but he's really refined in his routes. Or he's refined more than perhaps Metcalf is in some instances on his route running. Mid-level size, but man, he had some great production at USC. Only played 6 games. The Trojans did last year. The Pac-12 was kind of a mess during COVID. But he somehow caught 7 touchdowns. Very, very, very productive on good size. Another one that I really like is Amir Smith-Marset out of Iowa. Love his combo of size and speed. Complements Lockett and Metcalf well. I'm really looking for that third receiver that can complement the 2 skill sets of your best receivers right now. And I think Smith-Marset is another one. I know a guy you really like, a guy at Purdue, Rondale Moore. He's a bit smaller, but boy, he can run and he can shift and he can be a true game changer perhaps in the return games as well. And actually all 3 of those guys, or at least Smith, Marset, and Moore can also contribute in the return game. So yeah, those are my 3 I think that I would look at if you're dead set on taking a receiver around round 2.
I have one other player I'm going to throw on that list that might be there at 56, and that's De'Ami Brown out of North Carolina. He averaged 20 receiving yards per reception each of the last 2 seasons. He had 12 touchdowns in 2019, 8 touchdowns last year. He is a dynamite big play waiting to happen. He can do it from the slot and the outside. So I'm very intrigued by putting him, a bigger bodied receiver with explosive downfield ability, with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. There's a lot of receivers we could talk about, though, because this class is loaded. That seems to be the tradition now with 7-on-7. You are seeing that infiltrating the NFL draft with the number of really good receivers that have seemingly been available year after year. Next year's class might be even better, so we'll see how that looks. But a lot of really fun receivers the Seahawks can consider early in the draft here. Latasha Powell tweets, if we lose Aldon Smith, do you think we address edge in the draft? I can't rule it out because clearly they still felt it was an area they needed to continue to fortify. Otherwise, they wouldn't have signed Aldon Smith. So I could see them drafting at the edge position. I actually think they'd be more likely to pick somebody that can play that base defensive end spot, though, because Kerry Hyder's on a couple-year deal. LJ Collier's only got 2 years left in his contract. Rasheem Green is entering the final year of his contract and to this point has been largely disappointing. So I could see them picking an end that is more versatile. Maybe they can play both spots. And this isn't a great defensive end class, but there are some guys that could make sense for Seattle, especially late in the draft. There might be some bargains they can get late on day three. Mike Halsey tweets, what are the odds the Seahawks hold their spot in the draft and just get what they need with their three picks? The team is loaded, just need a center, receiver, and a cornerback or a backup tackle. That still seems like quite a few needs to address to me.
Well, Mike, I wish I shared your optimism that the Seahawks are loaded. I'm not sure I'd use that word. Yes, the Seahawks are a very, very good football team, a playoff football team. But I think we all saw that there is a gap that the Seahawks are dealing with here. And, yeah, they got a little better in the offseason, but I'm not sure I'd call them loaded. I'm not sure they can afford to only have three picks. Three picks right now straight up is embarrassing for the NFL draft. And so I would be floored, borderline angry if they stuck at 56 and stuck with their three slots and only picked three times. I would be actually pretty frustrated. You can fill those needs. I think the one that I just keep coming up with as, you know, when I'm going through simulations and mock drafts, the one that I struggle with, if you keep trading down and keep getting lower, is the center position. I think that's a pretty top heavy position in this draft. If you miss out on the first three or four, you're going to be waiting a long time to get a guy that you're probably going to be having behind Ethan Posick. So that would be the one where if there isn't just an absolute can't miss, it's like all these elite centers just fall for some reason. That would be the only way. But even then, you probably still want to look at trading down. We did a mock draft a couple weeks ago where I couldn't find a suitor for 56, but I ended up finding a little bit of a trade down scenario at 129, and I was able to actually recoup a pick from there. So even if they do pick at 56, which I would be shocked if they do, I would be doubly, triply shocked if they stand pat the last two picks and just pick three times. That would just be totally off the books for what the Seahawks do. I just don't think they can afford to do that right now.
I'm going to give you $50 again if they only draft three times.
$100, baby. All right.
I'm giving you a chance to make $100 if the unthinkable happens. And we know John Schneider has a tendency to make the unthinkable happen. But I am very confident neither one of these things are going to happen. So maybe you'll end up getting some money from me. But I really don't see any way that that's going to happen. There's going to be a trade of picks before the draft, or that they're only going to stick with three. I think that the opposite is going to happen in both of those cases. But I guess we'll see when the draft gets here next week. When we return to the third quarter, speaking of the draft, up to this point, we've done a lot of talking about players that would be available in the second round, the fourth round, and the seventh round. But we're going to be diving into some deep sleepers in this draft. Maybe some names that haven't been talked about very much that could make a lot of sense for the Seahawks late on day three in the 2021 NFL Draft. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Thursday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Nick Lee. Today through the 26th, listen to the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 presented by Locked On and Odyssey, featuring analysis from NFL experts such as Michael Irvin, Jason Lockenfora, and Brian Baldinger. Our local experts for every team are making trades and picking the next stars of their team. Search the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 in the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Odyssey is your audio home for all the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matter to you. That's AUDACY. Nick, it's time to talk about some John Schneider specials. And what I mean by that, your deep day three sleepers, players that maybe weren't on the radar for many teams or that fans haven't heard of, that could end up being key contributors down the road. and somehow were available late on day three. We have seen John Schneider unearth a number of talented players late in the draft and obviously in the undrafted ranks as well. They've gotten some really good players like Doug Baldwin and most recently Puna Ford. So this seems to be the bread and butter for John Schneider and his scouting staff. So let's talk offense today. Offensive sleepers in this draft, players that may be available deep into day three that could make an impact for the Seahawks earlier rather than later and have a chance to dramatically outplay their draft position. Who'd be the first name that jumps out to you?
Well, everyone's going to roll their eyes. But I want everyone to know this truly comes with my Seahawks hat on as well. I'm wearing two hats here, BYU and my Seahawks hat. Matt Bushman, a tight end. I think that he's flown under a lot of radars because of his Achilles injury, which is obviously very warranted. That's a pretty serious injury. But when you look back at the tape, at his, especially 2018, if you're skeptical at all about Matt Bushman as a tight end, as a pass catcher, as a guy that could be a weapon for Russell Wilson, look at his 2018 game against Utah, BYU versus Utah, which BYU blew a 20-point lead on, but we won't do that. that defense, Utah's defense, which included Marquise Blair and Cody Barton, by the way, he was mossing dudes right and left, 92 yards receiving. He just knows how to use his body. He knows how to get in front of guys. He also had a huge bowl game in the 2018 Idaho Potato Bowl where Zach Wilson had a perfect game, 18 for 18, and Matt Bushman actually made a crazy catch right in front of the chains or right in the out-of-bounds area to preserve that perfect game. And he just knows how to contort his body. Is he the most athletic, you know, twitch athlete tight end? No, he's not. And that's part of the reason why he's down here. But he catches the football. He's a big dude. He's productive at BYU. He's the first BYU tight end to have three straight 500-yard receiving years since a guy named Dennis Pitta, who, if I remember, I had a pretty decent NFL career with the Ravens. And BYU used to churn out tight ends like they did quarterbacks back in the day. I think Bushman is that retro throwback great BYU tight end that can just catch the football wherever it's thrown, and he would be a great weapon to have. And I think the reason why he's going flying so under the radar, didn't play in 2020 with that injury, haven't really seen elite Matt Bushman since mid to late 2019. But he's got the maturity. He's an older player having served his mission, the work ethic. I just don't sleep on him because of his injury. He's been working his butt off and been paying attention to him from a BYU perspective. This kid's ready to go. He had a great pro day. So if he's hovering around the seventh round and you think he might not go undrafted, pull the trigger, because I think he could be an excellent weapon for Wilson.
And I think getting another tight end late in the draft makes sense, even though they signed Gerald Everett. He's just on a one-year deal. Will Disley's going to be a free agent after this year. We don't know what to expect from Colby Parkinson after he missed a chunk of his rookie season as well. So there are still long-term question marks in that position. I went to the receiver spot. Again, this is a very deep receiver class. So I think you could see some players that maybe in earlier years might go in the fourth or fifth round that end up falling late into the sixth, seventh, maybe even undrafted. And the player that I'm really enamored by is Marlon Williams. And he's built more like a running back at over 200 pounds, 6 foot. He's a guy that when he catches the ball, breaks arm tackles, has the ability to run through guys. He's got a lot of after the catch potential for that reason. He also has the ability to take the top off of defense. He's a better vertical route runner than advertised. Had a 4.62 40, I believe. So he doesn't have blazing speed, at least in that regard, but he plays faster on the field. He's a player I think you could mix in with some jet sweep action from the slot. He's played some on the outside. He has past special teams experience as well, which is really critical when you are a late round receiver trying to make a roster. He's got that going for him. And so I look at what Seattle needs at receiver. They need a receiver that can create after the catch, has some versatility to move around the formation. I think Marlon Williams can be a guy that does that for you fairly quickly. Maybe he can carve out a role as your fourth receiver in this offense next season. He's a guy that I think could be available late in day three that would make a lot of sense. The other skill player that I've got in my sleepers, going to the backfield, Kene Nwangu from Iowa State. Now, he has under 800 rushing yards in his career. So some of you listening might be like, why would we draft a player that hasn't even hit 1,000 rushing yards in four seasons in college? Here's why. when you're late in the draft in the seventh round, you're drafting for traits more than anything. And this kid is just oozing with traits. 6'1", 210 pounds, and he ran a 4.32 40-yard dash, 6.83-second three-cone drill, and he had a 38-inch vertical, which is really important when you look at the threshold Seattle looks at a running back. They like running backs that have really high vertical jumps because it shows explosiveness. So he checks off those boxes. He's the size they look for. You see a raw runner on film that has incredible acceleration. It just feels like if the right coach gets a hold of him, and I think Chad Morton could be that guy, the right coach gets a hold of this kid, he is a ball Play-Doh. You mold him, this could be one of those guys that doesn't have much tread in his tires at the college level that could end up maybe having a ceiling of being a really productive starter in the NFL. And I think you can get him in the seventh round. So I would be all for that. I don't know if they need to draft a running back, but that would be the one scenario, that type of player, especially if they add a few picks, that I would be on board doing so.
I'll go receiver too as well, because I'm really a believer that the Seahawks need multiple weapons from multiple spots. Shai Smith out of South Carolina might be not quite a day three late draft sleeper. He's probably up there in the sixth round area, fifth round, maybe even fifth round area. But I think I just like his traits. He does look a bit Tyler Lockett-ish, and I think if Tyler Lockett just got an extension, but another guy that you can throw in the return game, he returned kicks for South Carolina. South Carolina had a horrible season last year, but he really was a shining moment for that team. He's sure-handed. He doesn't drop a lot of passes. He's got that possession trait. He's 5'10", but he's got a 4.43 speed, low 4.4s, high 4.3 speed. So I really like him. He was pretty darn productive, even with some mediocre quarterback play. Had 2 years of over 600 receiving yards, had 4 touchdowns, 633 yards in 9 games last year, over 11 yards a catch for South Carolina all 4 years, and actually had 15 yards a reception in 2018. So he's got some explosiveness too. So Shai Smith is my guy if we're going to go receiver. And then lastly for me, I'm going to go with, I know that I just mentioned that the center position is pretty thin when you get down especially after the first couple of rounds. But Michael Minette out of Penn State is a guy that if you find yourself on day three, and for some reason the Seahawks have not addressed the center position yet, I will be one that'll start to get worried, because I think that the Seahawks absolutely need to address the center position in day one, if day two, if not day one. But if we get to day three, I think Michael Minette out of Penn State, I just like that he's a three-year starter in a zone run blocking scheme, and a similar scheme that you might see with Shane Waldron. He's fundamentally sound, a good blocker. I think he's smart, and you know those guys at Penn State are pretty well coached despite their terrible season last year. But you know, just he fires off the snap, everything you want in a center. He's tough, he's hard-nosed, he's smart, he's pretty athletic. I think the biggest thing with him is he doesn't have that mean streak of just bowling over guys in the run game. But I think in a zone scheme, like we're probably going to see, that won't matter as much. I just like the 3 years of experience in the Big Ten in an offense in a system that you're probably going to see under Waldron.
I've got myself a Big Ten offensive lineman for my last sleeper as well. Now, Minette is a player that maybe some of our listeners heard of, because we've actually talked about him a few times on this podcast, looking at some day three options at center. But this is a player that I had never heard of until about a week and a half ago, and I was doing research on offensive line thresholds and watching some tape. And this player, Matt Farniak from Nebraska, I had not heard of him, but he's 6'6", 330 pounds. He has played right tackle. He has played guard. He even has a little experience playing the center position. So he has played a number of spots. You know the Seahawks value versatility. But what really excites me, I watched on film, I didn't see a guy despite his size. He was not a player that was going to be a road grader. He was not mauling opponents, but he was light on his feet. He did well agility-wise, moving laterally. So I think he would be a good fit in a zone-blocking scheme, like I expect the Seahawks are going to have with Shane Waldron as the coordinator. And then I looked at his pro day numbers. He checks off every single threshold the Seahawks look for with guards and centers. 33.25-inch arms, 9.63-inch hands, so that fits their threshold. A 5'2 40, I don't worry about the 40 that much with offensive linemen. His 10-yard split met their threshold. 7.193 cone, which is more than respectable for an offensive lineman. 4.47 short shuttle, 33-inch vertical, so he's pretty darn explosive for his size. 105-inch broad jump and 28 bench press reps. So this is a well-rounded prospect that's coming from the rugged Big Ten, as I said. Not a mauler, but he is a player that uses his size fairly well to wall off defenders, and he's got good lateral quickness, which is shown by his agility testing. That is seen on film. So this is a player that I have not even seen many people doing draft profiles for, but he might be a guy that ends up getting picked late in the draft that maybe a lot of people haven't heard of. I think he'd be a fun pick for the Seahawks. He might even be a guy that could be a project center for you because of his versatility. So a lot of value potentially late on day three for a player that maybe a lot of people have not heard of before. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Nick at Nick Lee 51. Follow Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. Coming up on tomorrow's Blue Friday episode, Rob Rang and I are going to close out the week exploring defensive day three sleepers as we draw closer and closer to the 2021 NFL Draft. Thanks for listening in. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Go Hawks.